The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone. This is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I'm Sam Livingston, your substitute host for today's show. Mr. Fleury is traveling on the personal appearance campaign. He was in Phoenix last night, and I believe he'll be in Los Angeles today. If not there, it'll be Sacramento. He's compiling an audio journal of the trip that he hopes to play for the radio show on Wednesday. On today's show, I want to take a look at some major incidents around the United States over the past weekend, mostly to do with weather. We'll take a brief look at Angela Merkel's latest round of shaking. That's the third episode she's had in the last month. And then we'll conclude with a lengthier section on the ongoing border crisis. We'll go ahead, like I said there, and start with a look at some of the weather disasters we've experienced, not just over this weekend, like I said in the beginning there, but over the past month. I just wanted to draw your attention to some of these ongoing disasters. There was the massive 7.1 earthquake in Central California that was on July 4th. It didn't cause a lot of damage. It was in the middle of California out in the desert, but there have been many aftershocks and what they believe may even just be the buildup to an even larger earthquake. Last week, I think this was over the weekend, there was a 4.1 earthquake in the Seattle, Washington area. There's Tropical Storm Barry, that's in New Orleans right now, and that's causing a lot of flooding in that city that was so devastated 15 years ago by Hurricane Katrina. Over the past months, since I've been in Oklahoma, there's been quite a lot of flooding in eastern Oklahoma, a ton of rain. Vice President Mike Pence, he was visiting the area about a month ago. Mr. Stephen Fleury drew attention to the massive flooding in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., and all the infrastructure problems that they have there. If you haven't seen that footage, and you can go back to that radio show and watch that, there's footage of water draining down the subway station, coming through the tunnels, the top of the tunnels and the subways down there, pouring down through elevator shafts. And there are obviously, like he said there, huge infrastructure problems in the nation's capital. And of course, people, at least half of America, they look at these problems and they put the blame on climate change. Though I have yet to hear anyone say that earthquakes are caused by climate change, I'd be interested to see what the argument there is. But I just wanted to, again, draw your attention to these disasters and how they're increasing in frequency and intensity. And it's a proof that what your Bible says is true. It's not about climate change. It's about what the Bible said would happen. Now, people, of course, won't look to the Bible because it says that these disasters are a result of sin, and people don't want to change, so they come up with something like climate change. This is from Mr. Gerald Fleury's February 2018 Trumpet article titled, "The Deadly Climate Change Deception." He writes, "Do you believe the Bible? It gives an undeniably clear explanation for what causes climatic disasters. The Lord is slow to anger, and great in power, and will not at all acquit the wicked. The Lord hath his way in the whirlwind and in the storm, and the clouds are the dust of his feet." That's Nahum 1, verse 3. Mr. Fleury goes on, "This says that God has the power over the storms. He controls where and how hard they strike. The idea that carbon emissions cause storms is the antithesis of what God says." Read the rest of the prophet Nahum's account. It is consistent with the message you find throughout the Bible. It says that, in a sense, humans are responsible for weather disasters, not because of fossil fuels, but because of sin, breaking God's commandments. And on top of those natural disasters, there have been quite a few more interesting things that have occurred in various places around the states. I'm not sure how frequent this is, but I've been watching U.S. news a lot more lately since I've been here in the States, and it seems like there are a lot of gas explosions around the nation. On July 4th, there was a giant gas explosion at a gym in Florida. 23 people were injured there, and the footage of that is really dramatic. This is a large building that just has the roof blown off of it. In North Carolina, there was a KFC that is completely flattened from another gas leak. And again, I'm not sure if these are due to people being irresponsible. Maybe it has to do back to the aging infrastructure and just how old some buildings are in the States. I'm not sure, but I've been seeing that a lot lately, just these buildings exploding. And then, of course, over the weekend, you probably saw this on Drudge Report, there was the power outage in New York City. And I'll go ahead and read about that from what the New York Post wrote about it. This is from the New York Post. It says, power outages struck much of Manhattan for 5 hours Saturday evening, plunging subway stations, Broadway theaters, and skyscrapers in the heart of the Big Apple into darkness on the 42nd anniversary, nearly to the hour of the 1977 blackout. Officials said some 73 residents were without power at the height of the outage, which officials preliminarily blamed on an Upper West Side manhole fire affecting an underground transformer. The power went out around 7 p.m., a blackout originally confined to the 30 blocks west of Fifth Avenue between 72nd Street and 42nd Street. Now, we've had our share of power outages on campus, and it's surprising how easily that can happen. And if you think, well, it's not hard to think about how reliant our nations are, especially Western nations are reliant on electricity. And major cities, they seem like they're immune to things like this. These are millions of people living in these huge population hubs, and it's hard to imagine, you know, all of those people, and especially in the middle of summer, no less, being without power, the sort of disaster that that can be. But it doesn't really take a whole lot to send these big cities back into the dark ages, quite literally. It could be something like just a worker and a fire starts and a transformer blows, and you've got a quarter of Manhattan without electricity. And I wanted to look at that story briefly because it did remind me of what Mr. Fleury has written about America's Achilles heel and how vulnerable we are when it comes to the cyber threat. Everything is on the grid. And I'll just point your attention to the article that he wrote in May 2005. That article is titled America's Achilles Heel and Germany. He writes, and he begins by quoting this scripture here, or I'll begin the quote by quoting this scripture. They have blown the trumpet, even to make all ready, but none goeth to the battle. For my wrath is upon all the multitude thereof. And that's Ezekiel 7, verse 14. Mr. Fleury writes, the trumpet of war is to be blown in Israel, mainly America and Britain. It seems everybody is expecting our people to go into battle, but the greatest tragedy imaginable occurs. Nobody goes to battle, even though the trumpet is blown. Will it be because of computer terrorism? How safe is America's grid? Think about a cyber attack on the electrical grid. No phones, no computers. There's no way to call for the nation to go to war. And that those images from New York City over the weekend are a stark reminder of just how vulnerable America is. And it could come from anywhere, really. It could be a cyber attack, or it could be like what happened over the weekend, just a mistake is made and suddenly half or a quarter of that city or that island is without power. Mr. Fleury did mention Germany in that article, America's Achilles heel and Germany. And I'd just like to spend a couple of minutes talking about Angela Merkel's latest episode of shaking. She was seen shaking again for the third time in less than a month. Remember, the first time that this happened, she said it was related to being dehydrated, made it sound like, well, this is a one-off, and it was pretty sad to see someone convulsing like that uncontrollably. But it does seem like it's related to a bigger issue. It happened a second time, then it happened a third time over the weekend. This is from the Wall Street Journal. They wrote, German Chancellor Angela Merkel suffered a public episode of involuntary trembling for the third time in just over 3 weeks, fueling speculation about her health after 14 years in office and prompting her to offer reassurances about her well-being. Ms. Merkel, who is 64, announced last year that she won't run for political office once the current legislative term ends in 2021. The incident on Wednesday, which was broadcast live, took place as Ms. Merkel oversaw a military reception for her Finnish counterpart. Her legs and hands started shaking uncontrollably during the German national anthem. Afterwards, she said she was doing fine and urged people not to worry about her. Now, if you haven't seen those videos, I'd encourage you to go and look at them. And like Mr. Brad McDonald wrote at the time, it is a stark reminder of how shaky politics are in Europe and specifically Germany. I'll just conclude this brief segment with a quote from his article on June 20th. It's titled Angela Merkel, Dehydration and the Holy Roman Empire. He writes, "Whatever the cause, this incident is a dramatic reminder that we need to keep an eye on Angela Merkel and German politics. Things can change suddenly. The video is a stark reminder of how close Germany is to major political change. And this means major political changes for Europe, too. Finally, this incident provides good opportunity to read Germany, A New King is Imminent, published by Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury in November. In the article, Mr. Fleury said that he believed Merkel could be forced out of office well before 2021, which is when the next elections are scheduled. More importantly, the article explained the enormous prophetic significance of the imminent change in Germany's government. He wrote, "The end of Merkel could be a turning point, not just for Germany, but the whole world." We'll go ahead and end that there and take a quick break. You can send any thoughts or comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
The Trumpet Daily.
Remember when the Democrats said President Trump was manufacturing a crisis at the southern border to make political gains?
President Trump must stop holding the American people hostage, must stop manufacturing a crisis.
This president just used the backdrop of the Oval Office to manufacture a crisis.
Folks, the president has manufactured one heck of a political crisis for himself.
Donald Trump is manufacturing a national security crisis.
You will hear them say is that this is a manufactured crisis. It's not a national security crisis.
The big scam of the whole address was that there's a crisis. There's not a crisis.
The notion that we have a crisis there, a security crisis, is absolute nonsense.
It remains a Seinfeld shutdown.
Seinfeld presidency.
All about nothing.
What happens when there is a real crisis?
when there is a real emergency? Does he take to the airwaves? Do we give him the airwaves? Do we believe him?
There is not a crisis at the border. It's a manufactured crisis for the president to get a political win.
He's determined to convince you there is a crisis at the border, even though an intelligence official tells CNN, quote, no one is saying this is a crisis except them.
It wasn't long after that that it did become a crisis in their eyes. And it was a crisis, and they put the blame squarely on President Trump. In May of this year, the Border Patrol apprehended 132,880 people trying to cross the southern border. In May, in 1 month. If that pace keeps up, there will be well over 1 million people trying to cross America's border this year. In the month of May, 12,000 of those children, or 12,000 of those people crossing were children under 18 that were unaccompanied by an adult. 12,000 children that appeared on America's southern border by themselves. 36,000 of those people were adults traveling by themselves, and the remaining 84,000 were family units. Now, I looked into this a little bit more to understand what the family unit is, and that's, of course, been at the center of this whole controversy is, well, these children are showing up with parents, and we have no way to prove that these are actually their parents, or are these adults that are claiming their children? At one border facility, they did DNA tests, and it revealed that one-third of migrants faked family relationships. So they were able to do a DNA test. And this is just on, or this is just at one facility, one area where they actually were able to keep people held and process them, figure out who they are, actually carry out a DNA test, and they found that one-third of the people there, 33% of them, were lying. And this is a crisis. It's been a crisis for decades. And it wasn't long after the radical left, you know, they're saying this is a manufactured crisis. The president is saying this to score political points. Suddenly they had to change their tune because there are images of people washing up across the Rio Grande dead. Then they started to realize, oh, children are being taken away from their parents, something that had been a practice that they have been carrying out for years and under the Obama administration. Children are being abducted and sold into sex slavery. And these people are being held in cramped facilities because there are too many to process. There's disease. They're not able to screen a lot of these illegal immigrants for diseases. They run right across the border. And now the Democrats, now the radical left sees this crisis and they say, well, it's President Trump's fault. And what's their solution now? What are the Nancy Pelosi's and the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's solution? They want open borders. These are the lawmakers asking for open borders. Make it wide open. And that way we don't have to house the immigrants. We don't have to worry about clean facilities. We don't have to worry about feeding them. We don't have to worry about processing them. Just open the borders wide open. It's just lawlessness. Now, America's southern border is a mess, and whose job is it to fix it? Well, who makes the laws in America? It's Congress. Congress is the legislative body that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez belongs to. It's their responsibility to make the laws. And they keep screaming that, well, it's President Trump's fault. Well, he's just enforcing the laws that are on the books. On Friday, the former acting head of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Thomas Homan, testified before the House Oversight Committee, and as you'd expect, there were fireworks. Ocasio-Cortez was there, and she made this hearing mostly about herself. And there was this strange moment. This doesn't have a lot to do with the content of the program, but I thought this was a really strange moment right at the beginning of this hearing where Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez stood up and asked to be sworn in. Now, that's not something normally done. She's not the one that's being testifying. It's not her testimony. It's the former ICE director's testimony. And she's sitting there asking the questions, and she asks to be sworn in. And here's a soundbite of that brief encounter there at the beginning of this hearing.
Thank you very much, Mr. Castillo-Cortez.
Mr. Chair, I would like to be sworn in.
I'm sorry?
I would like to be sworn in.
Oh, all right. We usually don't require a swearing in, but you want to be sworn in?
Fine. Yes.
All right. Okay. Do you, you stand up, please? Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you God.
I do.
You may be seated. Let the record reflect that Ms. Ocasio-Cortez answered in the affirmative.
Like I said, there a strange little episode right there where even the Democratic chairman, Elijah Cummings, said, we don't usually do that. So I'm not sure what she was trying to prove with that moment other than the publicity of standing up there and getting all the attention for herself. One of the standout points, though, during this hearing was this exchange that Ocasio-Cortez, and I'm just going to call her Cortez for the rest of the show because it takes a little too long to keep saying Ocasio-Cortez. So one of these exchanges that Cortez had with Thomas Homan, the former director of ICE, and I'll go ahead and play that clip for you here.
What I'm saying, this is not the only paper where we've given the secretary numerous options to secure the border and save lives.
And so the recommendation of the many that you recommended family separation.
I recommend a zero tolerance.
Which includes family separation.
The same as is with every U.S. citizen parent gets arrested when they're with a child.
Zero tolerance was interpreted as the policy that separated children from their
If parents. I get arrested for DUI and I have a young child in a car, I'm going to be separated. When I was a police officer in New York and I arrested a father for domestic violence, I separated that
Mr.
father
Homan,
from his family.
With all due respect, legal asylees are not charged with any crime.
When you're in the country illegally, it's violation 8 United States Code 1325.
Seeking asylum is legal.
If you want to seek asylum, you go through the port of entry, do it the legal way. The Attorney General of the United States has made that clear.
Okay.
So she's left speechless, and if you didn't pick that up at the beginning, it's Cortez asking him about the policy of separating children from their parents. And of course, they want to make this look as horrible and immoral as possible, calling these concentration camps, comparing ICE agents to the SS and to Nazis. And here, this former ICE director, Thomas Homan, he quotes the law. He actually listed the exact code that says this is how ICE agents are supposed to handle migrants and their children. And who makes that law? Congress, the body that Cortez is sitting in. And she doesn't quote the law. She goes back and says, it shouldn't be illegal. And he says that this is how we handle it. These are the rules. And I'll play a clip later on where he points to one of the congressmen and says, you're the ones who make the laws. If you don't like it, change it. He is part of the executive branch. He's under Homeland Security. He's under the executive, and their job is to enforce the laws that Congress passes. And on his part, he leaves Cortez speechless because he just quotes the law. And it's very simple. He's just doing what the law says to do. And he says, if you're an American, if you're a U.S. citizen and you commit a crime, you are arrested and your children do not come to jail with you. If you are a foreigner and you tried to cross the border illegally, you are committing a crime. It is illegal to cross the border at a point that isn't a port of entry. And you are arrested and separated from your child the same way every American is treated when they break the law. What he's saying is so simple. If you're seeking asylum, if you have a genuine problem, if you are fleeing a crisis, go to a port of entry, and that way we can process you the legal way. We can keep track of who's coming in to the country. No one's forcing those families into those holding facilities like the Democrats say. They can always choose not to come to the States. The radical left is not concerned with solving this crisis. They want open borders, and it's lawlessness, and it's wreaking havoc in this part of the United States. And as we'll cover later, it extends well beyond just the southern border. This is plaguing the whole nation. A lot of it gets down to them wanting more voters. Just allow all of these people into the country. And just like Mr. Barack Obama's Dreamers Act, you know, eventually put them on the path to citizenship. And in a few years, they'll be citizens and they can vote. And a lot of these Democrats are saying, well, just come on over the border and just wait it out. Wait for us until we can pass laws that will make you citizens. Now, I'd like to play another clip from this hearing. This is from Thomas Homan, and this is a little longer of a clip. I forgot to note down the name of the congressman asking him these questions, but he plays the race card, and it gets pretty heated in this clip. But it's really interesting, Thomas Homan's response.
Have we not learned from the internment of Japanese Americans? Mr. Homan, I'm a father. Do you have children? How can you possibly allow this to happen under your watch? Do you not care? Is it because these children don't look like children that are around you? I don't get it. Have you ever held a deceased child in your arms?
First of all, your comments are disgusting. I've served my country
sir.
For 34 years.
I find your comments
disgusting
out of control. As well.
I've served my country for 34 years. And yes, I held a five-year-old boy in my arms in back of that tractor trailer. I knelt down beside him and said a prayer for him because I knew what his last 30 minutes of his life were like. And I had a five-year-old son at the time. What I've been trying to do my 34 years serving my nation is to save lives. So for you to sit there and insult my integrity and my love for my country and for children, that's why this whole thing needs to be fixed. And you're the member
of
Congress.
We agree on that.
Fix it.
We agree on that. But I disagree. But I also disagree with your characterization of immigrants as pro-criminality.
People for three decades on this.
Gentlemen's time has expired. My time now.
Mr. Chairman.
It's my time.
The gentleman ripped off about seven different questions designed to go at the character of Mr. Homan, and Mr. Homan should be given a chance to respond. It was ridiculous the way he just rattled them all off and wouldn't let him respond to them.
Let me say this. I understand that, but I'm going to have civility in my hearings. All right? I have the floor.
I understand, and I agree with you.
I'm going to have civility. That's why I was banging, so that we could hear each person speak. I have been very courteous and very kind. Now, Mr. Homan, do you have something to say?
No one in this room has seen what I've seen in my 34-year career.
Very well.
No one has experienced what I've experienced. I've saw many dead bodies coming across this border. And you want to talk about the memo? This memo is one option to stop death. Not just about enforcing the law to stop death. If you want to legalize illegal immigration, good luck with that, because it's going to get a hell of a lot worse on that border. If you say, well, okay, from now on, there will be no consequence, no deterrence. It's not illegal to come to this country illegally. More families will come. 31% women will be raped. More children would die. We're a nation of laws. If you don't like it, sir, change it. You're the legislator. I'm the executive branch, and I've served my country honorably for 34 years. And I will not sit here and have anybody say that I don't care about children because you're not the same color as my children.
Thank you very much.
Very heated moment there. And the point that he's making is the goal is to save lives. We don't want people to die. We have to stop encouraging them to cross the border illegally. And one of the most dangerous parts of these illegal border crossings is the journey that these young children make, the 1,000-plus-mile journey from Central America and to Mexico, through Mexico, to the border. We have to stop incentivizing people to make that journey. We have to start enforcing the laws. Enter at a port of entry. Don't try to swim across a river with your child. And he is absolutely right. Mr. Homan is right. It's a total mess down there. Decades of laws that have failed. And presidents have been talking about it for decades, and President Trump finally decides to do something about it and campaigns on doing something about it. And all the while he's doing that, the radical left says he's manufacturing a crisis, and then they finally wake up. Well, I wouldn't even say they've woken up to it, but they just then turn around and say, well, okay, there is a crisis, but it's your fault. How is he supposed to deal with people who think like that? How are they going to create laws that help save lives, that disincentivize people from coming up and making that journey? Why can't they go to a port of entry? Why can't they do it the legal way? If it's a genuine crisis, the United States would let them in. We'll go ahead and transition into the big news over this weekend, which was that ICE was carrying out some raids in major cities across the United States. This is a quote from Fox News. A nationwide crackdown to apprehend thousands of illegal immigrants across the country began late Saturday in the nation's largest city and several other places, according to an official. Immigration and Customs Enforcement resumed its previously announced plan to apprehend thousands of illegal immigrants who've been given orders to leave the country. So these are people that have been before a judge, they actually appeared, or they were criminals and ICE found out about them, and they have been given orders to leave the country. And they are disobeying those orders, breaking another law. Fox News continues, the ICE raids began late Saturday and into early morning hours on Sunday in a number of jurisdictions, not just New York City. Now, these ICE agents are going around trying to enforce the laws. These are criminals at this stage. They have broken the law. They have ignored a judge's order to be deported. They are ignoring the government of the United States. They are outlaws, and these agents are trying to find them to kick them out. Now, not everyone coming across the border obviously is a criminal, like Mr. Trump has said, but there are criminals in there, and they need to be vetted. There are people who come in with diseases. They need to be vetted. The whole argument is we just need laws, and there needs to be a process for this whole thing. And what the radical left wants is leave it open. Let's not even deal with this. Leave the border open and let them all come across. I thought this story was shocking. This is from Chicago's new mayor, Lori Lightfoot, and she's the first lesbian mayor of the city. She banned ICE from accessing Chicago Police Department's databases. So these ICE officials are trying to track down the people who have broken laws, and the police department, they have more detailed records of crimes committed in the city. They have more details about the people there, and the mayor is commanding her police department to not cooperate with ICE officials. Now, this is a sanctuary city, and it's not cooperating with federal laws. It's breaking federal laws. And the mayor is saying, ignore the federal officials, ignore those federal agents, don't work with them. There have been cases in other cities where the mayor, I think this was in Oakland, where they knew that ICE was planning raids in the city, and she alerted those illegal immigrants ahead of time, they're coming, get out. And this is division on a massive scale, and it's anarchy. How can you rule a nation like that? And President Trump has been trying to get some leverage over cities like Chicago, over sanctuary states like California. And he's been trying to do that by denying them government funding. And he might just be making some headway in that direction. This is an article from The Hill. This is from Friday, July 12th. It's titled, Ninth Circuit Rules in Favor of Trump Administration in Sanctuary Cities Case. I was surprised to see that headline because normally the Ninth Circuit does everything against President Trump, but he's been working overtime to get more judges in a lot of these districts to try and move the courts back in a more centric, especially that court, which is way left, at least get them more down the middle, if not more to the right. Anyway, going on from this Hill article, it writes, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals on Friday ruled in favor of the Trump administration's efforts to prioritize federal dollars for local policing to towns and cities that complied with certain immigration policies. The ruling, a split 2-1 decision, said the Department of Justice was within its rights to withhold community-oriented policing services grants from sanctuary cities and states over their refusal to work with federal immigration enforcement authorities and instead prioritize agencies that focused on unauthorized immigration and agreed to give ICE access to jail records and immigrants in custody. So what they're saying there is, if you don't work with ICE, if you don't work with the agents of the federal government, we are not funding you to operate. Why would we continue to provide you with money if you are insubordinate, if you are not upholding the laws that we pass? And instead, we're going to give that money to police departments, to cities that cooperate and work with us. We are law enforcement and we're trying to enforce the law, and you are actively working against us. Why would we fund that? Now, they do have a lot of autonomy, and that's a good thing in the United States, but they don't have autonomy to break laws that the rest of us are held accountable to. We all answer to that high power, the federal government, ultimately, in a civic standpoint. Continuing on from the Hill here, it says, the city of Los Angeles first sued the administration after it was denied a $3 million grant on the grounds that it did not receive the money because it did not focus on immigration for its community policing grant application. The decision reversed a district court's ruling. So Los Angeles sued the federal government for denying it that $3 million. This case made its way up to the Ninth Circuit, and the Ninth Circuit ruled on behalf of the federal government that it can legally deny these cities funding. And we'll see how high up this goes, if it goes to the Supreme Court. It might not go to the Supreme Court. It could be that they decide we'll just go with the federal or the circuit court ruling. We don't need to take this up to the federal court. Obviously, you can expect that the city of Los Angeles is going to keep appealing this as high up as they can. But that is interesting, considering what Mr. Fleury has written about the president getting control of the courts. So he's got one decision that has gone in his favor, at least for the moment. Anyway, I wanted to get back to these ICE raids and what was happening this weekend. And ahead of these raids, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeted this, and this was on Thursday, July 11th, and the raids were going to be carried out Saturday night. I think that was July 13th. This is what she tweeted before the weekend. ICE will launch raids across 10 major cities this Sunday, all caps. Check your neighbors and know your rights. Remember, no one can enter your home without a judicial warrant. Sometimes ICE will try to show other papers to get in your house. Judicial warrants are from a court. No matter who you are or what your status is, this is the United States of America, where all people have rights. Know yours. Prepare. Visit wehaverights.us to learn how to handle this and other ICE encounters in multiple languages. So it's presented there in multiple languages. The point there that where she says, know your status, everyone has rights. What is she implying? That non-citizens have the same rights as citizens? That's unique to the United States. It's not true of most other countries. But the attitude here and what she's doing, she is an elected official. She serves in the government of the United States, and she's warning people, don't listen to federal agents. Don't comply with federal agents. Get ready for them, because if you're breaking the law, they're coming for you. I mentioned earlier about mayors who have alerted illegal immigrants ahead of time that federal agents were coming. This is anarchy and it's division. And think about what they're saying. If you've broken the law to enter this country, if a judge has told you to leave this country, you have rights. run from federal agents. Hold out as long as you can. Keep running from them until we can change the laws and we can make it so that you can be citizens and they can't kick you out. Now, think about this. If you are an American and you break the law, let's say you commit tax fraud, can you imagine an elected official of the government telling you, run? Do not comply with the law of the land. Run from the law. Run from law enforcement. It's turning into the Wild West. Every man does that which is right in his own eyes. But these are members of the government saying it doesn't matter what the law is. Get out while you can. Now, America has a huge problem on its southern border. This is a massive crisis that America has been dealing with for years. But what about government officials that encourage lawlessness, that actively work against the law, promote things like open borders? That's like an attack from within. And it's how do you solve that problem? That's coming from people who are American citizens. It's a problem that runs very deep, and it's not something that just goes away with building a wall. How do you explain or how do you solve, you know, people in government that won't uphold the laws, that encourage lawless behavior? Let's move on to another story here related to the same issue. You might have heard about the attack on an Immigrations and Customs facility in Washington State. Now, Washington State, that is not near the southern border. That is the northern border. Now, remember, ICE is an agency of the federal government. It's part of Homeland Security. Attacking a facility like that is an attack on the government, on the U.S. government. This is, again, a quote from Fox News. This is from July 13th. Police in Washington State say an armed man was shot and killed early Saturday after trying to attack a local Immigration and Customs Enforcement detention center. The Seattle Times reported that the unidentified man appeared outside of the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma with a rifle and threw incendiary devices at both the facility and nearby propane tanks, at one point setting a vehicle on fire. It could have gotten really bad. He attacked this facility, a government facility. And then there was another attack on an ICE facility. This is from The Hill. They write, protesters took down an American flag. Now, this one you might have heard more about. This was a massive group of protesters that went to an ICE facility in Colorado. They took down the U.S. flag from outside of that facility and raised the flag of a foreign nation, Mexico. Just a shocking development there. And that was in Colorado. That's not a border state. So this issue it's going beyond the border. It's, one commentator said, isn't this an invasion? You know, when you've conquered your enemy's territory, you take down their flag and you put your flag up. They raided this facility, government property. They took down the U.S. flag and hoisted the Mexican flag. Now, that night, agents, or after the protest, they obviously took down the flag and put the U.S. flag back up. But look at the lawlessness that's happening in the United States. Look at how bad it's getting throughout the nation at all of these facilities. You have members of the government encouraging this sort of behavior. U.S. citizens encouraging this sort of behavior. And I've read articles from people who aren't U.S. citizens. They're immigrants, and they acquired residency or their green card or citizenship, and they did it the lawful way. And they're upset because they had to work so hard to get into this country, and they had to have the right credentials and pass the right tests. And now the government is just trying to grant citizenship to whoever enters. And the whole debate gets back to law. It gets back to doing it the way the law says to do it. And this whole episode on the southern border and at these facilities reminded me of Mr. Stephen Fleury's Trumpet article. This is from September 2014. I think this was the cover story. It's the United States with a hand erasing the southern border. And this article is titled Borderline Breakdown. He writes, liberal progressives envision a world without borders. They want open borders. They don't want to send anyone home, certainly not children. They want amnesty for all illegal aliens. They want the federal government to handle the situation, indeed, not by locking the door, but by taking it off its hinges. This is what they have vowed to do from the very beginning, to fundamentally transform the United States of America. And like I said, this is from 2014. So this was when President Barack Obama was in office. This is when they were having tens of thousands of unaccompanied minors storm the southern border. I think it was something like 40,000 plus a month. And they were coming up on that train all through Mexico, a very dangerous journey. So this was during the Obama administration. Mr. Flurry goes on, and so the all-out assault on America's southern border will continue, and it will contribute to not only the transformation of the nation and the erasing of its border security, but to its actual destruction. Continuing on, this is later on in the article. He says, some analysts recognize the dangerous situation playing out, not only in the crisis at hand, but also in the government's treacherous response to it. But there is a much deeper analysis that reveals a lot more about America's illegal immigration crisis. That analysis comes from the prophecies of the Bible. In the United States and Britain in Prophecy, Herbert W. Armstrong identified the early American immigrants as being descendants of Abraham, specifically the tribe of Manasseh. Abraham's grandson, Jacob, passed his birthright promises on to the sons of his son, Joseph. Jacob said that the descendants of the one grandson, Ephraim, would become a company of nations in the latter days. He said that the other grandson, Manasseh, would become a single great nation. Genesis 49, verse 22, says, Joseph is a fruitful bough, even a fruitful bough by a well, whose branches run over the wall. Joseph's descendants, in other words, were to be a colonizing people in the latter days. That is exactly what they did, branching out from the British Isles all over the earth, including North America. In his book, Mr. Armstrong also explained that Ephraim's descendants are Great Britain, and Manasseh's descendants are the United States. Many of America's earliest immigrants came from nations other than England. A large part of Manasseh remained with Ephraim until the separation of New England. But our forefathers were to be sifted through many nations, as corn through a sieve, yet not a grain to fall to the earth or to be lost. Amos 9 and verse 9. Mr. Flurry goes on, Ephraim and much of Manasseh filtered through many different nations before they eventually immigrated to England together. Many descendants of Manasseh, however, remained within the nations to which they had scattered. These descendants eventually came to America when people began immigrating to the new colony. Not every European immigrant was a descendant of Manasseh, but a great majority were. The fact that the descendants of Manasseh mingled together with other Gentile immigrants is actually further proof of who the United States is in prophecy. This is what Israelite tribes typically did during the Old Testament era. And I just want to stop at that quote because if you read the Bible, if you read about ancient Israel, and history is our teacher, you see the same qualities, the same faults that they got into, the same blessings and cursings that they experienced happening to the United States. It's proof that America is a descendant, is the descendant of Manasseh. You can read it right in your Bible. Read the Old Testament. Look at the sins that ancient Israel got into. I'll continue on from Mr. Stephen Fleury's article. He says, Mr. Armstrong wrote, thus we have become known as the melting pot of the world. Instead of refuting our Manasseh ancestry, this fact actually confirms it. But America has reached a tipping point. It is no longer one nation made up of one melted together people. As Pat Buchanan wrote on July 14th, we no longer speak the same language, worship the same God, honor the same heroes, or share the same holidays. Our politics have become poisonous. Our political parties are at each other's throats. Christianity is in decline. Traditional churches are sundering over moral issues like abortion and same-sex marriage. Islam is surging. Our society seems to be disintegrating. This, too, was prophesied. The very blessings God bestowed on us because of Abraham's faithful obedience are now being withdrawn because of our many, many sins. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 43-44 says, "The stranger or foreigner that is within thee shall get up above thee very high, and thou shalt come down very low. He shall lend to thee, and thou shalt not lend to him. He shall be the head, and thou shalt be the tail." Mr. Fleury writes, "Lax immigration policies and weak borders are helping to fulfill the Bible's prophecies. The flood of illegal immigrants highlights a fundamental disregard for law. It exposes and exacerbates the loss of common culture. America's inability to protect its borders shows that the very things that define the United States as a nation are being chipped away. God said this would happen." Even well-known commentators who disregard these prophecies or who reject America's biblical identity can see that we are on a disastrous course. America is splitting apart at the seams. It's splitting apart at the seams. Those fundamental rules and laws that held this nation together, that made it a nation, are breaking apart. You have the government at war with itself. You have elected officials in government telling people to break the laws. You have entire states rebelling against the law of the land, against federal laws. You have strangers within thee that are getting above, and they're very high. Read Deuteronomy 28. It's stunning to go through that chapter. Just read it first and then take a look at the United States. Take a look at the news. Study the United States and Britain in prophecy. Read Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. It's amazing how you can identify the descendants of Manasseh by looking not only at the blessings that this country has received, but by looking at the cursings that it's enduring right now. And that border crisis, the division within the United States, it's further proof that Manasseh is the modern descendant of the United States, and that book, The United States and Britain, is a key to understanding Bible prophecy. It's a key that helps you unlock the entire Bible. I'll continue on from this quote from Mr. Stephen Fleury's article. He says, Buchanan asks, "If a country is a land of defined and defended borders, within which resides a people of a common ancestry, history, language, faith, culture, and traditions, and in what sense are we Americans one nation and one people today?" To paraphrase Ronald Reagan, once a nation loses control of its borders, it is no longer really a nation anymore. This situation is happening right now to the United States, and its own government is abetting it to its own demise. Now, he wrote that when the Obama administration was in power, and it's surprising to see President Trump now draws so much attention to this crisis. And maybe there will be a temporary solution, like we're seeing America being temporarily saved. And we need to keep watching these events. We need to keep watching what's going on the southern border. Keep watching what's going on within the U.S. government itself, that attack from within. And why are American citizens in our government so hostile to America's laws? And if America is that bad, why are all of these immigrants trying to get to the United States? I've been thinking a lot about that controversy with Colin Kaepernick and even Ilhan Omar, Ocasio-Cortez, Rashid Tlaib. They talk about how oppressive America is. I think Ilhan Omar is the only one that wasn't born in America. She came over as a refugee from Somalia. And they have their own view of what will make America better. And what exactly does that mean? You know, they want their own vision of America. They want to instill their own rules and laws, but they don't even want to do it in accordance with American laws. They won't do it lawfully. Where is this leading? It's leading to tremendous division inside the United States. And as Mr. Fleury said, it ultimately will lead to a civil war. I just want to finish with that final quote from Mr. Fleury's article. It says, "And its own government is abetting it to its own demise. Our own laws, our own rules, the way we govern, it's bringing this nation down even faster." Well, that's about all I have time for today. Thank you for joining us today on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to send comments, you can go ahead and send those to td@kpcg.fm. If you're up for an audio comment, you can visit the Trumpet Daily page at thetrumpet.com and find the button that says Start Recording to send us an audio message. Mr. Stephen Fleury should be back with you live on Thursday. Thanks again for listening.